You're listening to the CZ of Movies. My name's Colin. I am the C. Joining me is Zijan the Z. How is Zijan?
Hey, Colin. It seems like we have been seeing each other very regularly nowadays. More regularly than we usually do.
It's true. Last podcast, we told people that we'd come back with our impressions of Groundhog Day, the musical, which I thought was fantastic, and so much so that I have booked tickets to see it again. Mm-hmm. But we also went to see Muse in the middle of all that.
Yeah, we did. I learned one other new Muse song before I went to see Muse. Before that, I know 3 songs, and now I know 4. So
there you go.
All good.
At this rate, you'll know the entire Muse discography in only a few months.
Eventually, yeah. In good time.
They were fantastic. It's been good times all around. Did you like the Milton Keynes National Bowl?
Yeah, it was great. It was really hot though. I saw a lot of people who definitely did not put on their sunscreen because they were the same color as a freshly cooked lobster.
I didn't put on my sunscreen, I'm afraid, but I did wear a hat.
I think that helped, but you're not as bad as some of the guys I saw. It's like, you look so awful, man. Oh my goodness.
Very bad. Yeah. And the CZ top tip is that even if they tell you that you're going to have to throw away your bottle of water, they only mean the water inside. You can keep the bottle to fill up when you're inside.
Yep. That was a lie. I wasn't informed on that.
But now you know.
Now I know.
Now you know. Today we're talking about Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. We are also talking about the films of Ralph Fiennes. We have a quiz on the films of George Clooney and Julia Roberts and much more. Including, but not limited to, movie news. See, Jan.
Not a lot, though.
Not a lot, no. Not too much. But have you got some?
The biggest one, we've got casting news for Superman Legacy. So we now finally have Superman / Clark Kent, and that is David Corenswet, who looks a lot like Henry Cavill.
I've got to say, was there process? Find me someone who looks like Henry Cavill but is not Henry Cavill.
It's ridiculous how similar they look, right?
It's crazy. Poor old Henry Cavill. I mean, it's enough that he's just been in and out, and they've treated him really badly. And now they're like, we're going to get the younger model. I've never heard of this chap. I think he's fairly unknown. He was in a film called Pearl, I believe.
He's in quite a few Ryan Murphy TV series. So if you are on Netflix, he was on The Politician.
Oh, yeah.
He was on Hollywood, so those Ryan Murphy TV shows.
I almost watched The Politician once.
It's not great.
Never got around to
Politician.
It.
Yeah, don't. I wouldn't recommend it.
Is this the first time that Superman has been younger than us?
It won't be the last.
Right, how old's Henry Cavill? Henry Cavill, he was born in 1983. But David Corenswet, 1993.
Oh my goodness. I really hate him so much.
Yeah, that's reasonable. It's very reasonable.
We also have a Lois Lane.
We do. Rachel Brosnan.
From The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, I believe, which I've not seen.
No, I'm told good things, and every time I get an Amazon subscription, I think I must watch that, and then I never do. Yes, they had a slightly weird process where they had 3 shortlisted Clark Kents and 3 shortlisted Lois Lanes, and then they paired them up, apparently. The shortlist was someone called Tom Brittany, who apparently is known from Grantchester.
Okay.
Nicholas Hoult, who I think is a fine actor but would be a terrible Clark Kent Superman. That's a very strange choice. Were the men. And Emma Mackey, who was best known for looking exactly like Margot Robbie and probably for other things. Was she in Sex Education, maybe?
I do not know.
And Phoebe Dynevor, whose name I might be pronouncing wrong, who apparently is incredibly famous for being in Bridgerton, but again, I don't know.
So I've seen all of Bridgerton.
Oh yeah,
and I've still do not recognize who she is. So there you go.
She played Daphne in Bridgerton.
Oh, okay. Now I know who she is. Yes, she's the main character in the first season of Bridgerton. I clearly do not recognize the actress's name. She was the main character as well. Main point of view.
But you need never worry about her again because she's not Lois Lane.
Nope. I think they've made really good choices, right? Based on the selection that they had. I think they've done the best they had. I think both David Corenswet and Rachel Brosnahan?
Something like that.
Yeah. I think they fit the mold perfectly.
Yeah. I mean, I've not seen them in anything. Well, at least I have. seen them in a couple of things, I think. But they're not actors I know very well. She's also younger than us. It's not a surprise, really. But older than him. She was born in 1990. There you go. Yeah, they seem like they look the part. And,
they definitely look the part,
We trust in James Gunn. Superman Legacy is not a comic I've read, but apparently is a series where Superman arrives on an Earth that already has superheroes, which I guess is a bit unusual for Superman, maybe. I don't know. Mm. So we'll see what they'll do with that. I think it's probably a good idea rather than retelling the same story again.
I mean, like, we all want to hear about Smallville and the Daily Planet. And like
the farm of Kansas and all that.
Of course, yeah. I mean...
Do you think it's going to be a Lois Lane doesn't know he's Clark Kent situation? Also doesn't know he's Clark Kent, doesn't know he's Superman?
Has all the films Lois Lane do not know Clark Kent at the beginning? I assume so, right? Yeah, the Brenda Ruth one, it is the...
Yeah, Amy Adams found out very quickly, didn't she, in Man of Steel?
Yeah, that's true.
They seem to... I mean, the whole kind of alter ego, hidden identity thing seems to have fallen very much out of fashion. I think that's probably Marvel to thank for that, with I Am Iron Man and all that. But even in the Spider-Man, who's kind of the most famously incognito superhero, MJ found out very quickly. Then the whole world found out, obviously.
And then they forgot.
And then who knows what's happening next?
No one knows.
exciting times. Look forward to that. We also have news about Paddington in Peru. The third in the Paddington series. We already knew it was happening, and we all don't think we knew that title. But joining Paddington and friends is Olivia Colman, who is going to be playing a nun who runs a home for retired bears, presumably Aunt Lucy.
Yep.
Antonio Banderas, who is playing a riverboat captain. Mm-hmm. And Rachel Zegler, who keeps getting chances, and is playing his daughter, Gina. I think Rachel Zegler might be in trouble soon if she keeps making films as the weight of Shazam 2.
Why?
Just saying. Rachel Zegler feels very much of the moment. I think this could be a...
You really liked her in West Side Story,
I think she's good. I just think she needs... let's see how Snow White does. But I'm worried for Rachel Zegler.
Why, you think she needs less exposure?
Yeah, I think she's doing quite a lot of projects that in a row, and maybe if they don't have a couple of hits in there.
Yeah, I do have faith in Paddington in Peru. Of all the things she's going to be in, like Shazam 2 and Snow White, I mean, Paddington in Peru is probably the one with the best reputation behind it. Both first two Paddingtons were great, so...
Yeah, my only worry would be the director, Paul King. Do I mean Paul King? Whoever the director of the first two was, isn't coming back for these two.
Yeah,
not for this one, rather. So,
Sally Hawkins isn't coming back either. I just realised that.
Yeah, that was a bit of a surprise. Of her own choice, apparently.
Yeah.
She's been replaced by Emily Mortimer, who's great. So maybe I'm overstating this. I've just looked at Rachel Zegler's Wikipedia. She's got, as well as Shazam, Snow White, she's got the Hunger Games prequel.
Yep.
Not sure how well that's going to do. Then a film called Spellbound, which I'm assuming is not a remake of the Hitchcock or a remake of the documentary about spelling bees. And a film called
Y2K. Y2K.
And it depicts the projected event of Y2K actually happening while two loser friends crash a high school party in 1999. I take it all back. Sounds like a hit. Good luck to him. I'm not sure. Sally Hawkins, I think she put out a statement saying that she'll miss them, the family and the cast and all this, but no clear indication of why she's turned it down.
I do like Sally Hawkins, though, but I also like Olivia Colman, and Emily Mortimer is good as well, so it'll be fine. Sony has pulled a Spider-Man film El Muerto from its release date to the shock and horror of no one.
Now, this is a C to Z classic of news being announced that I'm sure we announced some months ago. This has happened a few times.
Apparently, they're blaming the writer's strike for it.
Sure.
Of course it is.
Was it going to be written?
No idea. And I mean, apparently there are complications with the Bad Bunny's touring schedule. So there you go. That's the main reason why they're not doing El Muerto.
Yeah, of course it is. Okay. Oh dear. Sony, what are you doing? It's no great loss, I think. I could be wrong. Maybe Bad Bunny is a phenomenal actor, and this was going to be one of the great movies, but I don't know. I feel Craven is going to bomb, isn't it? And then when they try and do their Sinister Six, when they put together like six characters no one cares about to fight a character they're not going to show.
I'll watch Craven more than I'll watch Morbius. Because I'll tolerate Aaron Taylor-Johnson more than I'll tolerate Jared Leto. So
yeah, that's fair. I mean, it looks pretty bad from the trailer, but you never know. Mm. Russell Crowe is expanding his list of accents. Dune 2 is coming, or Dune Part 2.
Yep.
And someone called Craig Mazin, who apparently is a showrunner for The Last of Us, worked on the script. Maybe he'll make it less boring.
I didn't find the first one boring. Only you did, and it's pretty much just you.
It's a one-man anti-Dune cavalcade, and I'm not afraid to plow this lone furrow. I think I've become more against Dune as time has worn on.
I don't understand why either.
Because it's boring, mate. And it's like 90% exposition.
The sandworm is cool, though. My last bit of news, and it's been a very slow news week, is that Tron Ares, which is the new Tron project, has added Evan Peters into the film. So Evan Peters, most known as Quicksilver in the X-Men films, will now be joining Jared Leto, which I mentioned earlier, in Tron Ares.
Yeah, I with director, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, Joachim Ronning?
Joachim, right, I assume.
Was it? Is that pronounced Joachim?
Could be. Makes the most sense.
Let's go with that. Joachim Ronning, who apparently directed Pirates of the Caribbean 5.
I lose track of that as well.
Yeah. I'm amazed this Tron thing is back on the table, to be honest. Cause,
yeah, me too.
I mean, I think both the previous Tron films are bad, but no one really liked Tron Legacy that much, did they? I don't think.
I didn't. I saw it, and it was awful.
Yeah, I just don't feel there's a lot of Tron fans out there. I mean, a lot of people like Tron, but how many people are like, yes, I must see more Tron?
No. Especially since the special effects don't really age that well now. I mean, there's so much neon lights can go
before. It's one of those weird ones where the first one has probably aged better than the second one.
Yeah, exactly.
Ares is weird. I mean, the God of War is rocking up in Tron.
I'm sure it means something else there in the lore that I have no idea what it means.
Yeah, maybe. We've certainly talked about a lot of films that I'm not planning to see, and two that I am. So there you go. That's all the news I have as well.
Cool.
Slow couple of weeks. We move on then to See or Not to Zed, the segment where we talk about films we have recently seen and tell you, the listener, whether you should see them or not Zed them. Zijan.
Yep.
Tell me what you've been seeing.
Yes, I finally done it, Colin.
You finally done it? You've watched Castaway?
Nope.
Oh.
But I finally bit the bullet for both of us.
Okay.
I saw the behemoth that is Avatar. The Way of Water. Avatar 2.
Good man. Good man. I it's on my list. I'll get
I'm
to
sure
it.
Sure is.
I'll get to it.
Just like I will get to Castaway.
Yeah. Okay, well, tell me. Tell me about Avatar The Way of Water.
So I'll start and preface it by, and everyone knows this anyway, going into it, that this is a very, very, very good looking movie. I mean, James Cameron and Water, he's just a genius with it. Like, it's incredible. Like, the things he does with light and shadow effects, the waves, how hair looks underwater.
Mm.
Like, I don't think you'll see a film like this ever again, you know, as good as this. Yeah, ever again done underwater. It's just incredible. And I can imagine it will look even better on IMAX because my small screen,
even better than lousy on your
television.
Laptop.
Yeah, it's on Disney Plus. I don't need to stream it. I did legally.
Do you have a Disney Plus app on your TV?
Yeah, I do.
Because there isn't one on my TV. It's really annoying. I have to plug in my laptop to the TV every time I want to watch Disney Plus on it.
I think you need a new TV.
I'm not going to do that.
But yeah, it's just stunning. It's just stunning. The story-wise, it's nothing that we've not seen before, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
It feels quite similar to the first film in many ways. So in the first film, Jake Sully was the soldier. I mean, it's just retreading Pocahontas. He comes and invades Pandora and then falls in love with one of the natives there. And then, you know, he learns the way of the natives and how they live, etc., and falls in love with one of them, and then becomes one of the natives themselves and defend the planet against humans. In the sequel, Jake and his family, he has quite a few members in his family now, four kids, decided to leave the jungle and go in, go live in the water area with the water clans, because they want to protect the jungle clans, because they think that the humans are after them specifically. So it treads the same thing. So they learn how to live near the water, learn how to live with the animals in the water, etc. You can imagine where it's going. It looks very pretty. They couldn't adapt at the beginning. They were teased by, you know, their kids were teased by the kids in the water tribe because they can't swim very well, etc., etc. And then it ends with a big war because obviously the humans found out where they live, and then they started fighting in the water. So it's pretty much the same sort of story as the first film. And spoiler alert, it's even the same bad guy as the first film as well. So
yeah, I heard that. That was weird.
Yep. And guess who won in the end? So
was it the bad guys?
No, it's the same as the first film. So like, I don't know. Like, it looks really good, but honestly, the plot is just, it's okay. Yeah. I mean, like,
3 hours and 12 minutes.
Though. That's the thing. It honestly could be shorter. You spend so much time. James Cameron clearly knows he wants to show off his skills, right? He wants to show off what he can do with all the water scenes. So he spends so much time there, which doesn't add to the story at all. It's just to show us how beautiful we can make water look. And that's the problem. That's the problem. It's just 3 hours. It's just too long. It's just way too long as a film. And the next Avatar film, apparently they're going to a volcano world when they knew
to do the same story over again.
I imagine so. This is not going to end, man. And then after that, it'll be Air World. Basically, the four natural elements.
Wow. And yet, it's the third highest grossing film of all time.
Exactly.
I don't get it. But yeah, I'll get to it one of these days, Ijan. Maybe.
I'm sure you will.
I've also been watching Disney Plus. I watched the Stan Lee documentary that came out. I don't know if it's how authorized or otherwise it is, but I think it feels very authorized. It feels very Stan Lee heavy. Telling the story of how Stan Lee came up with or co-created the likes of Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, the Hulk, I think. Basically all the Marvel, or a large number of the most famous Marvel characters, and how he worked his way up and was running the magazine at a tender age, and so on and so forth. I was intrigued watching it because I know a fair bit about the history of Stan Lee just from podcasts and things.
Yep.
And I know that there's a lot of people contest, was he more of almost a PR guy? Did he like grab a lot of publicity away from other people? So he's the one who had all the cameos in the movies. He's the one who everyone talks about. But they talk about Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko, two of the other original creators, and saying didn't they play a larger part than he admitted. And I wondered how much the film would address that. And they did have actually a clip they played from a radio show. I can't remember. I think it was Jack Kirby. It might have been Steve Ditko. I can't remember which of the two it was. Where they basically had an argument about who came up with what. And Stanley saying, well, they were my original ideas, so I'm the one who should have the recognition, and as we all saying, well, no, you came up with the vaguest idea and then someone else put all the flesh on the bones. So I think, yeah, did he just say, I want there to be a Spider-Man, and then someone else made the suit and the characteristics and the powers and whatever else. And it didn't, it touched on it, which I was impressed with, because I thought it might just ignore it altogether, but it was basically just that one bit. And some of the reception to this has been a bit frosty, I think, from the families of those creators, saying, yeah, yet again, Stan Lee has come out as the main genius behind this when that wasn't fair. So it's if you don't know the story of Stan Lee at all, I think it's worth a watch just to find out the history. But it didn't really tell me much that I hadn't come across already. It was fairly light touch rattled through, which I was expecting on Disney Plus, really.
Yeah.
The other thing I've watched is the film Elemental, which is not yet in cinemas, but I'm a very important person and therefore got early tickets from my good friends at the Times.
Of course, yep.
And let me tell you, this one was not popular with Time subscribers.
Oh, are you the only one there?
Not quite, but usually it's absolutely jam-packed for these things. And this one, apparently they did sell it out, but just a lot of people didn't bother turning up. So there are lots of spaces. It was down at the Everyman Cinema in Bristol that I've not been to before. So I sat on a nice comfy sofa watching Elemental. So for those who haven't seen the trailers, and it hasn't, I know it's not coming out for another few days as we record, but it's not had a massive publicity surge, has it? I don't know if you've seen much for it.
I heard that the trailers kind of misrepresent what it is about anyway. Because the trailers seem to imply, I was reading about this, but the trailers seem to imply there's going to be a Romeo and Juliet story, but it does cover a lot to do with like immigration and trying to assimilate into a new place.
It does, but I mean, but through the lens of a Romeo and Juliet situation, okay. Really. So I think that is a bit of both. It's I can't remember what it's called, Element City or something like that, where water, fire, wind and earth.
Oh, I spoke about it in Avatar.
Yes, there we go. Are living together, but yes, you're right. It is kind of covering the immigrant and in particular second generation experience. So the city is fairly heavily coded as New York, to the extent that you have the fire parents, as it were, turning up, and they speak in their language, and the guy at the desk doesn't understand them, so just makes up names for them. And yes, this idea that the fire people are kind of they're in their own part of town, and they're not accepted in the main part, and the main part is not built for them. So it's very heavy-handed in that respect. It's very clearly telling that story. But I think it doesn't work at all, because the concept of, oh no, you can't come here, these foreign people coming here, they're really dangerous, is true in this case, because they're made of fire. And it's a really poor metaphor, I think, to say, yeah, we can't trust these immigrants because they're dangerous. But yeah, they are dangerous. They will literally burn everything if they just walk through it. So I think that was bad. You know me, Zijan, I like the rules to work. And yep. It's very difficult. I mean, they try to say, oh, fire people isn't the same as fire, water people isn't the same as water, but it's very unclear what does what and how things work. In terms of, sometimes water will just trip over fire people and they seem fine with it. Sometimes water people travel in water and sometimes they don't, and it's very unclear what's going on. There's a fun bit in the trailer, actually, where they're walking... there's a fence, and the water guy just walks through the fence because he's water, and the fire girl just walks through the fence because she's fire. Yeah. And they're like, I don't know why we have these. And I was thinking, well, they'd keep the earth people out.
Yep.
Why do we not see more about them? So it's very much fire and water, and you see most of them, you see very little of earth and wind. But I don't know, it just smacks of something of a lack of inspiration on the part of Pixar. It seems quite an obvious idea to do, having done what they've done before.
I think Pixar seems to have lost its way recently. I can't remember the last Pixar film that I truly enjoyed.
I mean, Soul was very good, I thought.
But that was a while back.
Turning Red wasn't great, in my view. Again, it wasn't bad. It was fine. I'm sure there are lots of parents who will gladly bung this on and let their kids watch it on Disney Plus in a year or so.
Which is what I'll probably be doing.
There you go. Having seen this not long after watching Across the Spider-Verse, and it feels that Pixar is light years behind.
Very sad. Sad times for Pixar.
Speaking of Disney properties, Yijan, we move on to the main topic of the day, which is Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Has this one lost its way?
I forgot that it was a Disney property until the Disney logo came out.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, huh, since when did Disney buy Indiana Jones? Well,
yeah, it was a Fox thing, wasn't it? Oh, no, it was a Lucasfilm thing, wasn't it? Lucasfilm. So they, yeah.
They own everything. They've got all the money.
They don't own Paddington yet. Actually, do they own Paddington? They might do.
So, directed and co-written by James Mangold of Logan fame, which I love. We see Harrison Ford in his fifth and final portrayal of archaeologist Indiana Jones. Spoilers alert. John Rhys-Davies is back.
He's in the trailer. Yeah.
Okay, so that's fine. So John Rhys-Davies is back as Sala as well. This is set in 1969. The film follows Indy and his estranged goddaughter, Helena Shaw, played by Phoebe Waller-Bridge, trying to locate a device that could change the course of history before Jürgen Voller, played by Mads Mikkelsen, can get for himself an outer time and the outcome of World War II.
At least some of that is probably spoilers, but I think it's all fairly fairly well recognized. I'm not sure the whole altering time thing was ever officially
announced.
No, but it's called the Dial of Destiny, so I think we all worked it out. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to give any hints about whether or not Jürgen Voller, as played by Mads Mikkelsen, is a bad guy. But
I mean, with a name like Jürgen.
In a series that traditionally had the guy fighting Nazis, and Mads Mikkelsen mostly plays bad guys.
Yep.
Yeah. It's strange. Goddaughter's weird, isn't it? I can't remember the last time I spoke to my godfather.
Who's your godfather?
Phil Wynn is my godfather. He's a friend of my dad's, but I don't think I've seen him in 15 years.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Maybe we should team up and go on an adventure.
Yeah, I think you should. I don't have godparents, so yeah.
There you go. If you're listening, Phil Wynn, let's do this. Let's go and defeat some Nazis and stop time travel or something.
Yeah. Tell me how it goes.
Oh, okay, I'll follow up on the podcast. Yeah, here we go. So where are you on? I'm sure we've said this before, but where are you on Indiana Jones films?
I saw one, and that's the one with
Sean Connery.
You told me about this before. And I keep forgetting. The Holy Grail, is it Holy Grail? Is that right?
Holy Grail. There's one called Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade that features
that's
the Holy
the
Grail.
One, yeah. That's the one, yeah.
Cool. I've seen them all a few times, but most recently was well over a decade ago. So I was intending to rewatch before this, but I never got around to it. Oh. So I didn't. I think they're fine.
The only part which I like for Holy Grail is the end part when they're in the tomb and trying to solve all the puzzles and all the traps. I like all those parts of Indiana Jones with all the traps and stuff. But yeah. That's just me.
Oh, that's a bit of fun, isn't it? When you say the end, do you mean you didn't like the rest, or that was your favorite bit?
That's my favorite bit. I cannot remember the rest because that one stands out to me because that was the one where they spelled Jesus with an I. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, because they had no J.
Yeah.
Fun quiz fact. Only letter not to feature in the symbols of the periodic table. It's a J.
Is it?
I don't know if those are connected. Maybe they are. So I was coming to this one kind of thinking it would be fun, but wasn't with like decades of Indiana Jones love. Have you watched much Phoebe Waller-Bridge?
Yes, I've seen Fleabag, and I love Fleabag. Okay. I think Fleabag is very, very good.
I have not seen Fleabag. I saw Solo, where she voiced the robot or something.
Oh, yeah, I forgot she was in it.
Oh, she was awful in that. I'm not sure I'm blaming her. That's probably more a script thing. But
Yeah, I mean, I don't think she has much to do as the robot, though. I mean, it's just that. Yeah, just a robot.
She turned up for half a day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just do the voices and that's it.
Well, let's go through the cast. As we often do, Harrison Ford is back as Henry Indiana Jones.
Both young and old versions of Harrison Ford, because we saw in the trailers, there's a DH version of him as well.
Yeah, and that's we get quite a lengthy DH bit at the start of the movie. It must be 20 minutes of DH.
I mean, DH has come a long way. It actually looks really good in this film.
So good. Probably the best one I can remember seeing before that might be Robert Downey Jr. in Civil War. That was good, but that was very brief.
Yeah, can you remember The Irishman? Oh,
that's what I was thinking of the whole time. It's like, this is so much better than The Irishman.
Which was so, so bad. But yeah, oh my goodness, young Indy looks like young Harrison Ford. Like it's ridiculous. Like some of the de-aging that was done in The Irishman was so horrendous that you can't even recognize that.
Yeah, you're watching them thinking like, are they supposed to be 25 or 45? I've got no idea. Whereas this was, it helped, I suppose, that they had lots of reference footage to go from.
That's true.
But the problem with The Irishman, I think a lot of people commented, was the eyes, because eyes become more watery as you get older, and they hadn't changed the eyes, so they look like old men's eyes in a young man's face. This one, the only problem, I think, was the voice, because I don't know if they tried to change it at all. I think they must have changed it a little bit. But he had an old man's voice because he's an old man, and that didn't quite match the face. But other than that, spot on. The best one I've seen actually is before this must be Samuel L. Jackson in Captain Marvel. That was very good.
That's very good as well. I think his movements in the scene sometimes betrays it. And obviously, he doesn't do the action scenes because you have stuntmen for that, and you have to use stuntmen for that.
I'm sure when there was a silhouette running across a train, that was Harrison Ford.
Yeah. No, but even the things which seems quite straightforward, like putting on the shirt, right?
Mm.
Like you can tell that it's not a young person putting on a shirt.
Yeah, and it was the same issue with Captain Marvel. Samuel L. Jackson clearly was not, I don't know how he's supposed to be, 40 maybe, but yeah, clearly wasn't that age when he was doing what he was doing. But otherwise, yeah, absolutely spot on. We see a young Toby Jones there as well, as Basil Shaw, his ally.
Was this a character that's been introduced? Because I don't... Is it?
He was new, I think. Hmm. I think. I think other than Harrison Ford and John Rhys-Davies and one other character, I don't think anyone else had appeared previously. People might be able to work that out. Anyway, yeah. He does what he does very well, doesn't he? I mean, he loves this character, I think, in a way that... So reportedly, he's not a big Han Solo fan, but he loves Indiana Jones. Mm. It has been suggested that the reason he did Force Awakens was so that they'd let him do this. Don't know if that's true.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? To be honest, I don't think if they would be turning down a new Indiana Jones film either way. But
exactly.
But yes, he has that. I think they. I mean, he's 80 years old, so they couldn't kind of pretend he's not 80 years old. But I kind of like the way they leaned into the age thing. There was no other way to do it, really. But he's still running around pretty well.
Some parts, yeah.
Yeah.
Not all of them. He does show his age, though. So yeah.
Yes.
As he should. Like, being, come on, right? Yes, he should.
Yeah.
He is 80 years old, and he shouldn't be running like a young 30 or something already. So.
Although he did drink from the Holy Grail. That's got to give you a bit more time, isn't it? We have Phoebe Waller-Bridge, as mentioned. I liked her most of the time.
I can say that as much as I love her in Fleabag, and I still think she's a very wonderful writer. I didn't really like her performance in this film.
I think there were definitely times when she was kind of hamming it up in a very Fleabaggy kind of way.
Yes. Half the time I felt like I expected her to turn to the camera and make it an aside and a wink.
Yeah, as I say, I've not seen Fleabag, but I have seen clips from it. Hmm. And yeah, there are a few kind of... What was it? It does annoy me that Fleabag fans seem to think that that she invented breaking the fourth wall. It's been happening for decades.
Oh yeah, it has been. But she does
millennia.
Yeah, but she does it really well though in Fleabag, so it's not.
But yes, there were times where she was a bit over the top with that.
I didn't really like her performance. I just don't think she fit into the whole Indiana Jones vibe. If that makes sense, it just felt very. She just doesn't fit in. It just felt very modern. She felt very modern for 1969. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. And not a natural fit with Indiana Jones and Harrison Ford.
No.
I don't think. They also had, we haven't talked about, who was his name? Here we go. Ethan Isidore, but playing a young guy called Teddy Kumar, who is very Spielbergian. I know Spielberg didn't do this one, but... to have the kind of precocious kid is a very Spielberg move.
I mean, he's basically what Ki-Hui Kwan was, right? What's his
name? Yeah.
Slow round, was it? Short round.
Short round.
Yeah. I mean, I should have predicted what he could do at the end with all he was talking about at the beginning. I should have been able to predict it, but I didn't. Which is a shame on myself, really.
I can't remember what you're talking about, but we'll get to it.
Yes. I don't want to spoil it anyway. He's okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think he did what he did very well. Mm. James Mangold's got a good performance out of him because he's only a kid, so...
Yeah.
As mentioned, Mads Mikkelsen, is he a bad guy? Yes, he's a Nazi. A Nazi who, minor spoilers, seemed very dead from the first few scenes.
Yep.
When he was... Okay, slight spoilers here, but he was on top of a fast-moving train and got hit by a sign.
Will mostly kill a lot of people.
That would kill anyone.
Yeah, he looks perfectly fine. I thought he would have at least get a few scars or something from that, but no, he looks exactly the same.
I think movies are moving away from scarred villains these days. Mm. Probably for the best. Antonio Banderas turns up for a bit.
As a friend of Indies.
Yeah, the classic friend of Indie role.
Yep.
As mentioned, John Rhys-Davies turns up for a very short bit.
Even shorter than Antonio Banderas.
He's getting on, John Rhys-Davies.
He is, yeah. I like him, though.
I actually said that. He's younger than Harrison Ford. yes, he does that nicely. He has been in the previous ones. Maybe all of them, maybe not. And Toby Jones, everyone's favourite character actor.
Plays, India's friend.
And like, godfather of Phoebe Waller-Bridge, which he does with aplomb. I'm sure, have we ever done Toby Jones for Actor Factor?
No, I don't think we have.
That'd be a good Actor Factor. Boyd Holbrook rocks up.
He does, as a sidekick.
I just kept thinking of him in Logan. I guess.
Oh, again, the same.
Also James Mangold, yes. Yeah.
Pretty much the same kind of role, isn't it? Smarmy.
Smarmy
bad guy.
Well, that's the cast. What did you think of this overall?
I didn't like it.
No, okay.
No. I felt like... I mean, the plot is absurd, as you expect from an Indiana Jones film, right? So that I can forgive, you know?
Yeah, we should have said we'll do non-spoilers and we'll do spoilers. So we'll cover the plot in spoilers, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, the plot is absurd. You covered I've mentioned in my synopsis about turning back time. But it's an Indiana Jones film. So you kind of expect that that's the case. I feel like my problem is that it doesn't let things breathe.
Like,
okay. I have issues with the tone of the film. The seriousness in this film keeps getting undercut by quick shots, changing shots, and you don't get to just sit back and just take your time with those serious parts. For example, how am I going to do this without spoiling anything? It's going to be difficult.
Yep.
Okay, I cannot say this without spoiling anything because
we can come back to this.
We can come back to that. But I didn't like it because of the tone, and we're going to explain it in further detail when it comes to spoilers. I just felt, I just didn't care for it, really.
Fair enough. I quite enjoyed it. I think it ran too long, so it's 154 minutes, so it breaks my rule, as listeners will know. I felt like it could have been pacier in terms of plot. I think I get that what you mean about it's very fast paced in the action scenes. And to be honest, there's a great action scene I thought in Tangiers. I thought that was really nicely done. I enjoyed that a lot. But it felt very much like, so they're not just chasing after one MacGuffin. They're chasing after about three different MacGuffins, and they're going around just chasing after it. And I think that dragged out too long, that process.
Oh, yeah. And the bad guys are always so slow as well, by the way. Like, come on. The good guys can always chase up to them and catch up to them no matter what.
Yes. Yeah, no, that's
even though they had a lead start in almost every single situation. But then the good guys are like, oh, yeah, here we are. I know it's an Indiana Jones film, and you have to take everything with a grain of salt, but come on.
Yeah, I just think you could have cut out some of those journeys. I mean, there's a whole underwater bit that was a little bit difficult to follow, actually, because they're all in diving gear, so I wasn't really sure who was who. And I think, yeah, by this stage, they've been chasing after these dials of destiny for the whole movie. And I think, yeah, we've all worked out by now that it's time travel.
Yep.
You can't just have us chasing after a time machine for this long before we actually do something with it. So that was a shame, but as it is, I thought it was a fun romp. I thought Harrison Ford was on good form. It gave me what I'm looking for from an Indiana Jones film for the most part. My favourite bit probably is when they were actually in a tomb and following riddles, and
yes,
and it felt very much like an old Indiana Jones film. But
I wish that was longer.
Yeah, it's interesting. I did as well, and I'm wondering, was it a deliberate attempt not to just repeat the same story we've had before? I don't know. Would you felt that was too much copying previous ones?
That was my favorite bit. Cut all. I can do without any of the water scenes. Just make the tomb bit longer, as long as possible.
Yeah, I do tend to agree, actually. Although we got the callback to how Indiana Jones doesn't like snakes.
Yes.
The music in this one, just suddenly struck me, was used quite oddly, I thought, because we got the Indiana Jones theme quite a lot, which makes sense, but we got it at really weird times.
I agree with that. I it was fun at the beginning when the music started playing, because like, yes, you know, this is definitely Indiana Jones films. And
I think
then
he was
suddenly,
running, when he was running across a train. Yes, or that's correct. Makes sense.
That I had a small plus on my face then, and then suddenly it started appearing at the orders of times. I'm like, why?
There's one time where he just like slowly pulled up to a library or something. It's like, bum ba 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 ba. Like, what are you? This is not a necessary time for this, surely. I thought they did the right kind of level of look. Here's his hat. Here's his whip. Because I think in the previous one it was, I think Crystal Skull. It was very kind of hackneyed. Kind of like, it's the whip. It's his famous hat. Whereas this, they did do that a little bit, but I thought it was fairly earned. And I quite like the idea of he's now become this kind of dull grey professor that everyone's falling asleep in his lecture.
Yeah, that makes sense though.
It's quite funny. He's quite old to retire as well. He must be quite old. It's like 25 years too old to retire.
Not when we're that age, Colin. We don't have any money left. We'll have to stay working till we're 80.
Oh, goodness me, no.
Anyway, unless this podcast makes us money though.
Yes, this is our big money spinner is this podcast, and we promise to do it till we're 80. Did you remember last podcast I promised that if anyone went to see Is This Thing On and didn't like it, then I'd reimburse for their ticket price?
Yep.
My friend Ed is gathering all sorts of people to go and watch this, apparently.
I think that it's fair.
You said you'd split that cost, right?
No, I didn't. I clearly made it clear. I made it very clear when I was there. I'm not making promises on this podcast that I can't keep, Colin.
But on the other hand, I am editing this podcast, so...
you can put something with my voice in, so I promise something then.
No reason, but would you mind just saying, yes, of course, Colin? Too smart for me. Okay, I mean, I don't know how much I've got to say about this in non-spoiler territory.
So let's go spoilers bit. Yeah. I can start my complaining.
Here we go. Spoilers.
Spoilers bit. So my favorite bit, apart from the going into the tomb and solving all the puzzles and riddles, which was just like one puzzle, again, which upset me a lot, more than it should, but it upset me.
You were in tears in the cinema.
It was annoying. But my favorite bit was when Helena was asking Indy what he will do if he can turn back time when on the boat. And this is spoiler alert, because he explained that he'll go back in time and tell his son not to enlist. His son, who's famously played by Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, that was a very moving scene, only slightly undercut, because I just couldn't help but think the reason they've done this is because they don't want to cast Shia LaBeouf, because he's... And I think that real world kind of aspect didn't help. It was also slightly weird to have done it after we had kind of half caught... You know when he looks in the window of a TV store and it's got him wanted on the news?
Yeah.
And it says, Dr. Henry Jones, who recently lost his son and whose wife left him. And I was like, they said that and I kind of only just caught it. And I was like, did they just say that his son is dead? Did they? And you think, why would you put that in before you have the moving moment where he reveals that?
Yeah.
That was an odd choice. But yes, he did that very well. And she's very good in that scene as well.
I thought she was very good at the scene as well. I think it was just undercut by the fact that it switched too quickly to the next day, and then she was, fencing one of the sailors straight after.
She was, wasn't she? Yeah,
it just... that's the thing where I was complaining about the tonal shift. It's just, like, let it rest, you know? It's a very good moment, very poignant moment with Harrison Ford feeling very sad. Indiana Jones, just let it breathe a little. It's the same as well, like when he lost all his friends died on the boat, pretty much everyone died. They all got killed, and then they were jetting away, and you know, Helena was laughing or cheering and whooping because she got off, and then he was saying, my friends have died, and then it lasted 1 second.
It was good he pointed that out though, because that happens a lot in these kind of films where everyone's celebrating. It's like, you know, a lot of people just died. Got killed. I did feel Phoebe Waller-Bridge wasn't helped by the script, which got her to say ridiculous things like, I only care about cash.
So the thing you can believe in is cash.
And you think, this is... and again, it feels a bit Spielberg from the kind of his kids' films, or more kid-oriented, where you have very clear messages. But, I mean, so clearly she was going to learn that it's family is more important than money and all this. You think something a bit subtler would have been nice.
I agree with that. But yeah, those are the things I was complaining about when it comes to tonal shifts. Like, half the time, it's supposed to be serious. You know, you're worried that you're the kid friend kid that who's with you has been kidnapped. But then everyone starts joking the next scene. It's just very, I just don't understand the tonal shifts. I mean, it's just very jarring to me. I didn't like that bit of it.
On the other hand, going down the subway on a horse, that was pretty cool, right?
That's cool.
What I found slightly odd, I did like that scene. But then, Phoebe Waller-Bridge wasn't involved in the script, was she? But there were a few times where they seemed to be building up for a punchline, and then there was nothing very good. So in that one, he's just jumped out of ahead of a subway train on the horse onto the platform, and he says to someone, "It's faster by subway." And I was like, is that a slogan or something? But I've looked it up and it isn't. It's just nothing. Surely there must be a better line you could have said at that point.
Yep.
It doesn't have to be like the world's funniest line, but at least it has to be a joke. So time travel's real.
No, well, to a certain time though.
To a certain time. So I don't think this really made sense. So Toby Jones's character has gone kind of crazy. All about the Dial of Destiny. It turns out there's two halves of it, and also maybe a third part that tells you where one of them is or something. So there's the three things they're searching after. And I won't bore the listener by telling you the various different times it was bumped around and stuff. But he'd written down in his book the dates 1969 and 1939. And then Mads Mikkelsen tries to go back to 1939 to kill Hitler, to replace him as the Nazi leader, maybe?
Uh-huh.
And that doesn't work because apparently the thing just takes you back to Archimedes. So how did Toby Jones know about this whole 1939-1969 thing?
Because he's an archaeologist.
What?
I don't know.
That doesn't make any sense.
Was that the dates that he sent to Indy in the book?
Yes, it was.
In the letters.
But
By the way, he's English. He doesn't write dates like that, like American people do. No, it's wrong.
It is wrong. Thank you. This is the Venom driving on the right-hand side of the road.
I'm so annoyed by that. When I saw the dates, I was like, those are not the right dates. Those are American dates. And Toby Jones is British. He's playing a British character. Any British person wouldn't write dates like that. Any sensible British person anyway. So you shouldn't. That's probably why he knows he's going mad.
Yeah, the first sign of madness is
writing
American style dates. I just don't think, like, if I just don't know how he knew that was supposed to be a thing anyway. And as far as I can work out, the dial just tells you where to go, does it? And there's this gap in time, but because the dial isn't creating the time rift, it's just telling you where they are.
I don't understand the whole thing at all. Like, I don't understand how they went back in time. I don't understand how it works. I don't understand how they take the dial and put it together, and then suddenly this thing gets created. Why? How? Did they explain that?
The reason they didn't explain it is because it doesn't make any sense. Is that I'm sure they did say it tells you where the time is thinner or something, where the rifts in time, where the fissures in time are. But then it says that Archimedes deliberately made it so you could go back to his time. But he's not creating the time things; he's just pointing to them.
I think everything past the part where they retrieve both parts of the dial didn't make any sense whatsoever.
No, I mean, it's probably true that previous Indiana Jones films haven't maybe been completely sensible. But yeah, this just was, the logic didn't make sense. It was.
No.
I mean, I'm quite glad that they didn't have a whole thing where they went back to 1939 or go back and try and rescue Charlotte Beef or something like that. I think it made sense not to do that. Building up a whole, like, 2 hours, 2.5 hours nearly, well, at least two hours of a film about time travel before you actually do any time travel was a brave move.
Was it the right move?
I think the way they used it, it probably was. This wasn't a kind of jumping back and forth time shenanigans kind of movie. So I think it did make sense in the end.
But it just didn't work on its own, right? Like,
yeah, you need to make those first 2 hours, well, firstly, like, shorter, but also, like, more interesting.
You put yourself in Mads Mikkelsen's mind, right? He would need to know that he needs a plane chartered in an airport ready to go with the dial in mind to get to this particular spot, apparently in Greece, because, yeah, I don't know why they chose this spot in time and space. The plane can fly through for some reason. He chose that.
Both planes, like, having the dial doesn't make you able to fly through it. Anyone can fly through it if they just happen to be there.
Yeah.
But again, how many fishes are... Because there's this whole thing banging on about continental drift and the reason that this isn't going to take 1839 because of continental drift. But they're saying, well, if Archimedes made it so that it always goes back to Archimedes, then that's got nothing to do with anything.
The last, like, was it half an hour just didn't make sense at all. Obviously, there's another plane because the little boy can fly a plane. I was talking about you, telling you about this. Because obviously, the little boy, he was talking about Orville and Wilbur Wright at the beginning. I was like, oh, obviously, he can fly a plane.
You also see him flying a plane. Well, not a plane, a kind of a flight simulator, don't you?
Yes.
So, yeah.
Right. Nice. I didn't know that we could do that. And then, of course, he could fly a plane and chase after a proper pilot into the time warp, and of course the plane won't get shot down for some reason, whereas the other plane gets targeted by all the armies there, whereas one other plane is fine, it's okay, we'll just leave that, let it fly on its own. The last 20 minutes didn't make sense at all.
I think going back to then worked a lot better than I thought it would. Because intrinsically, if you told me, Indiana Jones is going to meet Archimedes in this one, I think that sounds like the worst thing ever. But I think they landed that pretty well. Maybe not. Maybe you disagree. Method, I don't know. But
I think that's okay. I just think the method to do that.
Yeah. No, the method to get there didn't make any sense. Particularly when you've got the whole film is based around finding this thing, that if it doesn't really make any sense what it does, that kind of detracts a lot from it. I really thought she was going to leave him there, actually. I thought she was going to let him live out his days in Syracuse, hobnobbing with Archimedes. It wasn't to be.
Yeah, and then they came back to the present because she knocked him unconscious, which is probably not a good thing to do for an 80-year-old.
Pretty dangerous to punch an 80-year-old in the face, yeah.
Very, very dangerous. Come on. And then he makes up with, surprise, surprise, Marion Ravenwood.
That third person I was referring to earlier, Karen Allen, is back, back, back.
Does not earn at all the reconciliation.
Yeah, it didn't surprise me because she was quite a big part of Kingdom of the Crystal Skull and they got married at the end of that and she was in the first Indiana. And I think it would have been weird if they didn't have her.
I think it would be weird not to have her, but for her to reconcile with him given what he explained and what has happened.
Yes, because she had this whole thing saying, I heard you're back, are you back? And it's like, okay, it's a metaphor, fine. But yes, it wasn't... No. I didn't spend any time on that at all, did they? And I did wonder whether Charlotte Buff was going to walk in a hole. Oh yeah, I also went and somehow saved him. I'm glad they didn't do that because that would.
I'm glad they. I'm okay, they didn't do that. But he did mention that he lost Charlotte Buff in the war, and then he and his wife got distant because of that, right?
Yeah.
So you can't fix that by him going unconscious.
No, no. I mean, if he'd done a kind of. That he was the one who kind of was distant and couldn't, but then I can, at least there's something about, okay, he snapped out of it or whatever else. But yeah, that's not the story. She doesn't even know this has happened.
Exactly.
It's just his goddaughter, who she's never met, turns up at her house and like, so do you want to come back?
And kiss him.
He's like, yes, I'm all over it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that whole where does it hurt thing, I think, is from a previous Indiana Jones film. It's been a long time since I saw them, as I say. I think that was in... maybe the first one. That could be wrong. I don't know. I thought this was all right, but I don't know how it's going to go. Let's have a look at the reception. I think it's getting fairly middling reviews, isn't it?
Yeah. I really do not care for it, Colin. Plot-wise, it just can't... It's just... The last 20 minutes was bad. I didn't care for Phoebe Waller-Bridge's performance. Tonal is just weird. It's just... not for me. And I'm glad it's the last one, basically.
Fair enough. 68% on Rotten Tomatoes, apparently, which is sounds about right to me. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Fine. And yes, there's no way we're going to get any more. There is occasional talk of, are we going to get anything else in this universe? So there was at one point a Ravenswood series. I don't know what that was supposed to be all about. I just don't think that's ever going to happen, because Indiana Jones without Indiana Jones would be nuts. I don't know, even if you wanted to do that, what would you do? You're not going to spin off Phoebe Waller-Bridge, are you?
No. I don't think they will.
No, that'd be mad. So farewell, Indiana Jones.
Farewell, indeed.
Are there any more Harrison Ford projects to come back? Witness 2. Is that going to...
Air Force 2.
What do you think is the most like... We've had lots of Star Wars, we've had Indiana Jones, we've had Blade Runner come back. What is the most likely Harrison Ford project to be resurrected?
I don't think he's done anything else more popular than those.
That, I mean, those are the big three, aren't they?
What Lies Beneath?
Yes. I suppose we're going to see him in as Thunderbolt Ross.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. So it's not the last we'll see of Harrison Ford.
No, I do wonder how much more we're going to get of that, because he's not a young man. He can't be making these for another 20 years. We move on to Actor Factor, the segment where we talk about the films of a particular actor, and this time it is the turn of Ralph Fiennes. Do you want to kick us off, CJ, with a bit of Ralph Fiennes?
Yeah, I'm not going to count how many because I just listed Harry Potter as Harry Potter.
Fair enough. Okay.
Yeah. So he plays Lord Voldemort in all the Harry Potter films, which I've definitely seen.
Only four of them, apparently.
Since number four, right? So four. Yeah. And I don't think he appears in five. I don't think he appears in six or seven, one of them. He plays Lord Voldemort. The Harry Potter film stand on its own is okay. He was also in the James Bond film series from Skyfall, I believe.
Yep.
With Daniel Craig. So all the films from Skyfall. So Skyfall, Spectre, and the most recent one, which I can't remember the name of. No Time to Die. No Time to Die, yep.
So close.
Almost correct, yes.
Yep.
And he was playing M?
Yep.
Yes, I know stuff.
Nailed it.
He was in The Menu, which I saw recently, and I think you did as well.
I did, yes. Yeah, it's a good film.
It's pretty good, yeah, with Anya Taylor-Joy and Nicholas Holt. Pretty decent film. Like, I don't think there are any bad films that he's been in.
Ooh, I've got a few.
The ones that I've seen anyway. Maybe Made in Manhattan.
Jennifer Lopez rom-com.
Back when Jennifer Lopez was doing all the rom-coms.
That's a bold claim, but we'll let it pass. He's also voiced Alfred in the Lego Batman movie and the Lego Movie 2. Mm-hmm. He was in Grand Budapest Hotel, which I think is it the most successful Coen Brothers? Sorry, Wes Anderson.
Wes Anderson, yeah.
Film. It's certainly up there, and probably my favorite of the ones I've seen.
It's really good, though. I enjoyed it.
Superb. He played Charles Dickens in The Invisible Woman, which isn't bad. Apparently he's in The Hurt Locker. I don't remember him in it. That was a very good film. 70 Junction is good fun. Schindler's List, of course, was his his big breakthrough.
I've not seen Schindler's List yet.
Have you not? He plays basically the main villain. Kind of, there's a lot of villains in Schindler's List, but he's kind of the sadistic Nazi prison guard.
Well, I'll just wait for the Logan Oscar for that, really.
Oh yeah, we'll get to that at some point. I've seen 22 of his films, so maybe we won't go through all of them. But the ones I really didn't like, I hated The English Patient. So I know that a lot of people love that film. I couldn't stand it. I didn't like In Bruges, which again I know a lot of people like. And I couldn't get through The Kingsman. I liked the first Kingsman film, and I even liked the second one, which didn't do well with critics. But I got maybe half an hour, 45 minutes into The Kingsman, and it was awful.
I don't think I've seen The
really
Kingsman.
Really boring. Yes. So part of the reason I mentioned Coen Brothers is because he was in Hail Caesar, and that was one of the more disappointing Coen Brothers films, I think. There's a few not great ones in here.
Yep.
What's your favourite?
I forgot to mention he was also in Kubo and the Two Strings, which is a late kind of animation.
Oh, was he? Okay.
Yeah, my favorite.
Does that mean that's your favorite?
No, I do. It's okay, but it's not my favorite of all the Leica animations that are there. I don't know. I think the Grand Budapest Hotel, probably because it's more unique compared to the others. It's really good though. It's as you say, one of my up there Wes Anderson film.
Yeah, let's agree with that one, because I've got a few I like here, but that is probably the top for me as well. And I suppose the bottom's got to be The King's Man on the basis I couldn't get through it.
Mine is Made in Manhattan.
I didn't mind Made in Manhattan. I mean, he's not a rom-com lead, really.
No,
that's
he's
not his,
not
his strength. But next time, then, we will be switching to Look Back in Oscar, as you hinted at, the segment where we watch a film that's won Best Picture. Oscar, Zijan, can you remember what I told you we were going to do shortly before we started recording?
It's not Schindler's List, that's for sure.
It's not Schindler's List.
It's Mutiny on the Bounty.
It is Mutiny on the Bounty. So we check it out. I've ordered it from eBay on DVD because I'm still doing that.
Someone needs to support the DVD business, right? Might as well just
absolutely
be you.
Absolutely. We move on then to the quiz, our final segment, where today we're quizzing on George Clooney and Julia Roberts films. And
yes, I made a mistake last episode because I said that they were in Crazy. Well, not Love, Pray, Eat, Pray, Love together, yes, but they're not.
But that wasn't true.
That's not true at all.
Is that question one? Oh yeah, since we're doing things we're wrong about, apologies to Sasha Kaye, whose name we completely butchered last time.
Is it Sasha Kaye?
I think so. And I can repeat those apologies next time if that's still wrong. But I think that's right. I've just finished watching, before we recorded, a George Clooney and Julia Roberts film.
Which one?
Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. So I'm hoping there's lots of detailed questions about that.
Nope.
Ah.
Question one. Who directed Money Monster?
Jodie Foster.
Jodie Foster.
Question one for you. Of their five films together, which has got the highest rating on Rotten Tomatoes?
It has to be Ocean's 11, right?
It does. 83%.
Question two. Where is Ticket to Paradise primarily set?
Bali. Uh-huh. Question two for you. Will ring a bell. Who directed Money Monster?
Jodie Foster.
Still Jodie Foster.
Question three. I forgot that they did Confessions of a Dirty Mind. Is it Confessions of a Dirty Mind?
Dangerous Mind.
Dangerous Mind together. Yeah, because I didn't ask any questions of that.
Okay. Oh, no, I just finished watching it.
Question three. What does the title Money Monster refer to?
It's a TV show hosted by George Clooney's character.
That's correct, yeah.
I have seen that, actually. You might struggle with this one then. In Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, what is the name of the real-life game show hosted by Chuck Barris from 1976? In fact, I've said from 1976 onwards. I think it ran for a few years.
It's not on now, I guess.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I wouldn't know this. No. Is it a British game show?
No, it's American.
That's even worse. Supermarket Sweep.
It's worth a shot. It's called The Gong Show.
No clue.
Yeah, you might have had to have read a bit about this film to have got that.
Yeah. Question four. Which actor cameoed as themselves in both Ocean films?
Topher Grace.
That's right.
We've got a lot of crossover in our questions this time. Mm-hmm. But I've extended this question, so it's the same question, but it's going to take much longer to read. Julia Roberts appeared in Ocean's 11 and 12, but not 13. Which other actor did the same, playing himself? He was also in the Julia Roberts films Mona Lisa Smile and Valentine's Day.
Oh, that is very long. Topher Grace.
so much information for you.
I kind of knew you'd know this, so I didn't bother with it. Question five, the last one, for the win, if you get this.
Yes.
Richard Reed portrays a character named after which MCU Avenger? Almost blowing Saul's cover in Ocean's 11.
Ooh, I don't know that. Richard Reed almost blows Saul's cover.
Yeah, in Ocean's 11.
I've named off an MCU Avenger.
Yeah.
That's not easy. I'm going to say War Machine.
No, his name is Bucky Buchanan.
There you go. In which case, this one to tie level.
Yep.
What is the surname of both of their characters in Ticket to Paradise?
Oh, no. Why did you ask me what's the surname of both their characters in Ocean's 11? Because I know that.
I thought I gave questions where the answer isn't in the title.
Oh, no. I'm going to go with Alan.
It's Cotton.
Oh, great. You're extending your lead again.
So it's another victory. I have extended the lead. Next time, we are quizzing on the Christopher Reeve Superman films.
Oh, wow.
So I'm slightly surprised we haven't done before, to be honest. I did check. There are four of them. Well, five, I suppose, if you count his cameo in The Flash.
No.
No, fair enough. It's off. What is our main topic for next time, Jason?
Mission Impossible Fallout, right? No, Fallout. Mission Impossible 6.
Seven.
Seven.
Yes.
I got it in the end.
Yeah. Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. We'll see you then.
Bye.